Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, recorded in the new Center for Chamber Music during the Seattle Chamber Music Society's 2020 Virtual Summer Festival. I'm Dave Beck from Classical King FM. I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us wherever you listen. SCMS cellist Ronald Thomas has played in Seattle since the earliest years of the Seattle Chamber Music Society in the 1980s. In our first ever podcast from the new SCMS Center for Chamber Music in downtown Seattle, Ron Thomas remembers his friend, fellow cellist, and founder of the festival, Toby Sachs. Her legacy is felt strongly throughout the new facility. Good afternoon from the Center for Chamber Music in downtown Seattle. This is our first Classical Conversations podcast in this new home of the Seattle Chamber Music Society and the 2020 Virtual Summer Festival. I'm Dave Beck from listener-supported Classical King FM in Seattle. Today is July 17th, 2020, and the Summer Festival continues online this week with original and exclusive content available on demand through August 17th. While so much is new and different in this season of producing concerts amidst a global pandemic, there are so many aspects of the festival that are familiar and treasured. That applies to my guest today, who has been coming to Seattle to play with the Seattle Chamber Music Society since its founding in the early 1980s. Cellist Ronald Thomas represents the high level of musicianship and sense of collegiality and family that distinguishes the Seattle Chamber Music Society from others. Ron is an international soloist and chamber musician, director of music festivals and societies, and respected teacher and recording artist. And we welcome him to the podcast.
Thanks so much.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I have admired your playing for such a long time.
You're very kind. Thank you.
1985, the first
1985
year?
Was my first year. Yeah. Yes, I learned a lot of the chamber music repertoire right here in Seattle.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, there were works I was already familiar with, but many of them I played for the first time here.
Yeah. Well, we're sitting in this beautiful library performance space, and I see scores of Toby Sachs behind me here.
Well, Toby always had a giant collection of music, and she kept it in these drawers in her living room. And when it came time to play something, you could go find your part. I usually brought my own, but if things were a little unusual or you might forget a part, someone might forget a part, there was always a lot of music.
She had it there.
Yeah.
She was my cello teacher at the University of Washington. And
yes.
Then I went into radio. And she was always calling me when I was on the radio and saying, what was that piece you played? And so she just always had an ear out for new scores.
Toby had a great interest, of course, in works that she didn't know because she was programming the festival. And the festival includes so many works that they couldn't all just be Brahms sextets and right. Mendelssohn octet, you know. I mean, she really bought hundreds of CDs, and she'd listen to unknown works, and she really explored the chamber music repertoire like no one else I've ever met.
Yeah. What were the circumstances that brought you to Seattle? How did she happen to reach out to you?
I think that originally someone canceled and she called me or something like that. I'm not really sure. Huh. She was close to Susan Wadsworth, who ran the Young Concert Artist in New York. And of course I won that competition. So yeah. Susan was kind of pushing me and I was lucky to be pushed.
Yeah, I know. Toby would always go to, you know, she just was scouting out networks. She was like a, you know, sports
scout. She was really, you know, she was looking all over the place for music and musicians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you come to know her better over the years or get a deeper appreciation for her?
Well, you know, after a few years, we began to, Toby moved into a new house, and that house became the center of the festival. It was bigger than the one she had previously, and she had a great piano, and so we were all there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it must have driven them crazy. I mean, especially Marty, her husband at the time, you know, to have all these musicians crawling all over his house. But it was it is part of what you alluded to earlier, the unique closeness, because the festival always provided meals. I know of no other festival that does that,
mm-hmm.
or that has done that. And so we were playing together, eating meals together. It was really, really helped foster the kind of musical closeness that made it especially rewarding on stage.
Yeah. Right. And then Marty had that brilliant library with all the collection of
sort of amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marty had his own collection of, I mean, while Toby collected the music, Marty was a book collector.
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't go near that though. I mean, we'd rehearse occasionally in that special room of Marty's, but nobody would touch the books because
no those were they very were rare.
rare books. Yeah.
And valuable books. So you know you've come back so many times over the decades, and part of it is, you know, described right there, the sense of hospitality and collegiality, and what else makes this festival such an extraordinary destination?
Well, for me, I always, despite the fact that July has always been busy, I every year carved out time to be here. I have had some of my greatest playing experiences here, and in addition to the closeness I've developed with many people, including my hosts, Mary Morgan, the recently late Dr. Alan Morgan, we became personally very close, and it was like a second home. Really, you know, and the musical atmosphere was such that you could go through stages of learning and trying things and not be intimidated or self-conscious, but to just really express oneself. Toby really valued individual expression. She had artists over the years that were not sometimes all that popular as people to play with for this reason or that reason. But she saw these qualities in individuals, and she really stuck to her guns on that. And it's great to play chamber music really and develop a kind of chamber music happening that has room for individuality. So often, you know, music performance becomes a bit whitewashed in chamber music. You know, you have a bunch of rehearsals to decide what not to do, and then when you've finished stripping all those things out, then you play a concert. It wasn't like that here, you know. I mean, people had room for individuality, and they developed their chamber music skills simultaneously.
Yeah. I always thought, in many conversations I had with her, to preview the festivals over the years, that she really liked that sort of chemistry set aspect of it. Like, I wonder if I put these two chemicals together.
What will happen?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you got a puff of smoke, but that's true. You know, it wasn't always all like-minded people. It was a situation where people had to get on, and everybody had to make compromises. But you started from a place of a strong individual point of view.
Yeah. You played a movement of the Rachmaninoff Cello Sonata at Toby's Memorial in 2013. How did it come that you played that particular piece, maybe even that movement? How was that the right piece?
Well, that movement seemed to say it all to me about playing in a memorial. It's great beauty and kind of somber tone were kind of just the perfect thing for the moment for me.
Yeah. Was that your choice to contribute?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was just kind of generally agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably hard to even put into words what it meant to play.
Yeah. That. It was a very sad day, of course, but, it was a beautiful memorial with so many people playing, so many different things. It really was kind of representing the festival in the way it is varied.
Yeah. And she was just in the process of passing the festival over to James Ennis at that point.
Yes.
And how has he kind of picked up the baton in your view and taken, you know, what she created and really ran
well with it? First of all, we're sitting here in this brand new festival headquarters that has lots of rehearsal space and pianos and gone are the days of running across town to rehearse here or there and having to look for places to rehearse. We know where we're going to be. I mean, it's coincidence that during these hard times, this pandemic, that this is now available, because it would have been much more difficult to go into someone's home safely. And so all the respect you need to show for just being in public. We get you know, tested when we get here, and then we come in and someone takes our temperature every day, and you wash your hands, and that's, you know, the entry into the Seattle Chamber Music offices and rehearsal space, and so it feels very much like a cocoon here. It's such an enhancement that James and the supporters of the festival have created by creating this space. And I think that James has his own voice, his own ideas about how things should work, but it's very much is highly skilled and highly insightful, and he's picked up the baton extremely well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversation Podcast. The podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and Classical King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us when you listen. The podcast is produced by Nikhil Sarma and Rachel Soprati. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusic.org. I'm Dave Beck.